Welcome to the Yoga Hour, offering insights and practices for spiritually conscious living in today's world. Here is your host, Dr. Laurel Trujillo.
Welcome to the Yoga Hour, where we talk about yoga in all its depth and breadth as a path to spiritually conscious, fulfilled living in today's world. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, host and producer of the show. Today, we will be discussing how the healing energy of our life force, or prana, as it's referred to in Sanskrit, gives us an amazing capacity to heal and thrive. The great yogi Paramahansa Yogananda gave us teachings and techniques to use this energy in powerful ways. I am joined today by Shivani Lucky. Shivani Lucky dedicated her life to the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda in 1969 when she met Swami Kriyananda, the founder of the Ananda community. Her passion has always been the self-healing techniques of Yogananda, taking on as her unique mission to find and share these mostly out of print or never published teachings. She helped to establish two Ananda communities, one in California and one in Assisi, Italy, as well as the Yogananda Academy of Europe. She's also the founder of Life Therapy School for Self-Healing. Since 1985, she and her husband have lived at the Ananda Assisi community in Italy. Shivani is the author of a trilogy of books entitled Healing with Life Force, Teachings and Techniques of Paramahansa Yogananda. Today, we're going to be discussing the first book in the series, which is focused on prana. Welcome to the Yoga Hour, Shivani Lucky. I'm really delighted that you could join me today on the podcast.
I'm equally delighted, Laurel, to be with you and to be with your listeners.
So before we begin our dialogue about yoga, healing, and prana, let's start with a yoga moment, a moment of contemplation, a moment of being right here and right now. So let's begin by bringing our attention to our body. Whatever we're doing, just feeling our body in space. And now turning our attention to the surfaces that support our weight. Where are our feet? If we're sitting or driving, what part of our weight is supported by the seat? And now we turn our attention to the breath. And just noticing as we take a fully conscious breath on the next inhale and exhale. On the next inhale, noticing the cool temperature of the air as it passes in through the nose. And as you breathe out, feel how that air has now been warmed as it's passed through the body. Continuing to focus on the breath. Continuing to just be right here and right now. Here is something to contemplate, a quote from Paramahansa Yogananda. Shivani offered this quote in her book, and I liked it so much I decided to use it today. Self-realization is the knowing in all parts of body, mind, and soul that you are now in possession of the kingdom of God. That you do not have to pray that it comes to you, that God's omnipresence is your omnipresence, and that all you need to do is to improve your knowing. Self-realization is the knowing in all parts of body, mind, and soul that you are now in possession of the kingdom of God, that you do not have to pray that it comes to you, that God's omnipresence is your omnipresence, and that all you need to do is improve your knowing. Om. Once again, Shivani Lucky, welcome to the Yoga Hour. Again, I'm delighted you're able to join us through the magic of Zoom all the way from Italy so that we can discuss the first of your trilogy of books on healing with life force, teachings and techniques of Paramahansa Yogananda. I should say that all three books in this trilogy are available in India and Europe as the entire trilogy, and in USA through Crystal Clarity Publishers. The first volume has been published, with volumes 2 and 3 to be released later this year. I believe volume 2 is coming in June.
Correct.
The second volume is going to be focused on the mind, and the third on magnetism. This first volume, the book we'll be focusing on today, is about prana. So first, I wanted to start with a little bit about your background. You are a student of Swami Kriyananda, who was a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our listeners are familiar with Roy Eugene Davis, who was also a direct disciple of Yogananda around the same time as Kriyananda, or Donald Walters, as he was known initially. They both spent time together. And as a matter of fact, I had just sent you, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, but
I
a very
did.
Sweet photo, you know, of the two of them there at the Mother Center with Yogananda. I just love that photo. I don't know why, but
it's
it just
marvelous.
Seems very, very magical.
They were in their 20s and just full of light and
yeah
enthusiasm.
They both went on to live, you know, quite a number of years beyond the passing of Yogananda, which was all the way back in 1952. Mr. Davis had a lovely story about how he first arrived at Yogananda's headquarters in Los Angeles at the age of 18 on Christmas Eve in 1949, and that he was welcomed in by Donald Walters. And I understand that Don Walters, who is not that much older, had arrived just prior to that, had arrived in 1948. You studied with Swami Kriyananda from 1969 until his transition from this life in 2013. And as I mentioned in the introduction, your introduction, you've always been drawn to and focused on these teachings of healing from Paramahansa Yogananda. Can you say a bit more about what led you to write this book at this time?
Good. That's a very good question for us to start with. And I've been, of course, thinking about that. I thought about that some years ago before I started writing. It was more than a 2-year process, but I actually started thinking about it about 50 years ago when I first began to read and study these teachings. You know, we are familiar with great people who have come to Earth and who have done special things. And sometimes we think about them in a very limited way. For example, Laurel, if I say to you the name Leonardo da Vinci, what comes to mind? Mm-hmm. What was he? What did he do?
Well, so many things. What comes to mind most recently is I saw a beautiful play based on the notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci, which was quite remarkable.
Isn't it? Now, most people, you know, will think of him saying he was an artist.
Yeah.
And of course he was, but his art was actually a very small part of what he did. In fact, there are not very many canvases of his that he's done. Very few of them, in fact. But Leonardo was, you're talking about the sketchbooks. He sketched every part of the human body in detail, which is a basis for scientific study even today in universities. Leonardo was an engineer. Leonardo was an architect. He was just so much. Yogananda is known for certain things. He's known for his autobiography. Mm-hmm. Which has been the inspiration for so many people, opening them up to the world of spirit, to the spirit within them. Through that book, motivated people to seek their own spirituality and seek their path. Millions and millions of people have read it, and his intention was not to make them disciples of himself. Some, of course, have become that, but to stimulate their spiritual search. Yogananda is known for Kriya Yoga, bringing this ancient science into the modern world, especially to the Western world, to us, to the followers, students of Roy Eugene Davis, and so many others. Yogananda is known for the science of self-realization. Yogananda is known for those very important things. And he set into motion many, many things, waves that are continuing into our generation in the future. My purpose in writing this book was to also make him known for what I consider him to be the founding father of spiritual self-healing in this age of energy. And we're going to talk about that this evening. But in studying his teachings, in practicing his techniques, I've come to understand, I've come to realize how deeply he expounded and how important it was as part of his mission to help us understand that we have control of our destiny and that we need to take control of our little self and of our higher self. And that as we do that through self-healing, it leads us to self-realization. And I hope this evening we're going to get into some of the fundamental principles in this science of spiritual self-healing. So that's why I wrote the book. The second reason is that many, if not most, of his writings and teachings were not available to a general public. Yogananda himself wrote five or six series of correspondence courses that are not available, but were available to me. Starting in the 1920s, Laurel, in his magazines, he had monthly magazines and he wrote articles every month for them. Many of those articles deal with healing. He wrote his commentaries on Bhagavad Gita and on the Bible. And in there, there are so many, like the healing miracles of Jesus, so many things from Bhagavad Gita. So there they are, they're like all over many of his books and of his lectures. And people would say to me, where can I find Yogananda's teachings on healing? And they would go other places, and I would say, no. The master has something to offer for everything. How to improve your eyesight, how to do fasting, how to heal ignorance through meditation. So that was my motivation, Laurel, to get all of these into one place.
Well, thank you so much. It really is a gift to be able to access these teachings. As I mentioned, the first book focuses on prana, Sanskrit word, which means our life force, our vitality. This is an area that's always been so interesting to me as a Western-trained physician, because Western medicine doesn't really have, too much to say about it, mostly because it's not measurable. At least in our Western world, in a way that, that leads it to be part of the conversation. So when you talk about prana, you introduce this, concept of prana to your students. How do you explain that? How do you
It's
explain prana as a whole?
challenging, and I've had a lot of time and experience in doing this because I've been teaching courses on spiritual self-healing really for even more than 50 years now. And some of the things I say is when we go outside on a starry night and look up, especially if you're outside of the city and you can see, what's your feeling? What happens to you inside? And we see the vastness of space And we're presented with its power, with wisdom, with its intelligence, you know? And we know intuitively, you know, that we're just a little drop in such a vast ocean of something, you know. And what is that something, you know, that underlies everything? You know, it's a curious thing that astrophysicists now and those who are exploring space are discovering that even in the areas of space that they thought were empty, of course, are not empty. As there's advancement, you know, in the abilities of telescopes, but also they are discovering that there is an underlying frequency that's coming from all parts of space. Mm-hmm. Now, that underlying, you started the session with chanting Om. Mm-hmm. Okay, Om is prana. Mm. That is the origin. In Sanskrit, it's called not only prana, it's called the pranava, which is the power of creation itself. Before there was this power, there was nothing manifest. There was only pure consciousness. But with the emanation of pranava, of that first movement, of the first vibration, everything eventually came into manifestation. Mm-hmm. So just like there's a sound, there's that vibration that underlies, that prana underlies is the essence of every subatomic particle, you know, every quark, every, and the vastest galaxy. It's all made of the building blocks of prana, which is conscious, which is powerful, which is omnipresent, mm-hmm. which is unlimited. And that is the force of life, as you said. Prana means life. Prana means breath. And prana means this power. And through the teachings of Yogananda, which are not his, you know, he also is a channel for bringing the ancient wisdom into this modern age for all of us, you know. He is showing us how we can harness that prana mm-hmm. and use it for our health, our healing, our success, our relationships, you know. And that's the important part of this book, Laura, is how we can get a hold of the prana and use it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And I was just going to turn there because when you've talked about prana, you've talked about it in the very expanded, you know, sense of underlying everything in the universe. And yet it also plays a really critical role in our own healing within our bodies. And of course, yoga, you know, looks at us as having an energy body, an energy sheath, you know, that prana is running through. Always has struck me as so interesting that traditional Chinese medicine, you know, looks at this life force as qi, and it runs through meridians. And yoga has something that is definitely not identical, but it's so similar that we have prana, this vitality, this vital force that is running through these channels in our body, the nadi.
The nadi.
Yeah. Exactly. And so it's so interesting to me that they both have that. Although again, I think they're talking about the same thing, but you know, they don't overlap is what I'm trying to say, you know, 100%. It's the meridians are, you know, different than the nadis, but it's so interesting that they both viewed that energy. I talk about it as an energy architecture that underlies mm-hmm. our physical body. And that's where the vitality, the energy that we feel, you know, to go ahead and do things, that's what we're talking about here. So did you want to say a little bit more about prana's role in healing?
Well, Yogananda said that all disease is due to two factors. One is an insufficient amount of prana flowing into the body. And the second one is an imbalance in its distribution throughout the body. Okay, so I'm sorry, I'm thinking in Italian, a lack of equilibrium. Okay. So when there's vitality, okay, the more prana we have, the greater our ability to stay healthy, and when we're not well, to heal. Okay? So more prana equals more healing, more possibility of healing. And the energy body is something that scientists are coming slowly to realize. I'll tell you a little story. Many years ago, there was an osteopath, a bone doctor, who was very good in healing difficult breaks of the bones. And what he did was to implant electrodes around the breaks and to emit then minuscule waves of electricity. So he had very great success. He was going to be nominated for a Nobel Prize for what his name was, Robert Becker. And then because of his experimentation and his experiences, he posited that there was a secondary nervous system in the body that was made of energy. You know, that it wasn't just, you know, the nervous system or the physical. There was a parallel. Because of that, his name was withdrawn as a candidate. But that was a long time ago, and his experimentation has continued. So I hope that, you know, with these books, they will also reach medical people in the medical field as well as in the alternative field. But to get back to your question, the more prana we are able to bring into the body, the more we are able to consciously distribute that prana and get it to the cells, the muscles, the organs, the more healthy we can be. And this book, and especially in the first volume, gives Yogananda's techniques for doing both of those things.
Yes, which is why it's really a gift. It's great to have them all, you know, collated and, you know, put together in one place. So we've talked many times on this program about how in the teachings of yoga, we are each emanations of the one. However you describe that oneness, you may describe that one as God or Supreme Consciousness. There are many names referring to this same, you know, principle. And I really liked this quote in the book from Yogananda. He wrote, "The soul is individualized spirit. The soul is individualized spirit as the wave is the individualized ocean. The spirit is immortal, omniscient, omnipresent, ever new bliss." So the soul is individualized, immortal, omniscient, ever new bliss. That's just so beautiful.
Isn't it?
Yes. However, as you write in the book, part of being human is that we also have an ego. And this is, you know, one of the kleshas that is described in, you know, yoga philosophy, you know, this ego. So how do you describe that, you know, process, that ego for your students? And why do you think it's important that we understand it?
It's very important because we live, you know, with the ego, and it basically controls our life. So let's continue Yogananda's definition, because after he defines the soul as individualized spirit, omniscient, and ever new bliss, he then, in the next phrase, goes on to define the ego. And he says, the ego is the soul that identifies with the physical body and the material world. So this is a we need to unpack this because it's a very dense aphorism. So the first part is that the ego is the soul. And in the book, I call them twins. The soul and the ego. They're kind of like Siamese twins that then got separated at the beginning of creation. Because the main, we can say, law of creation itself is duality. There's always two. Movement means two, movement in two directions. Before that, there was one consciousness. Then comes the pranava, and now there's two. So these twins are called the soul, in Sanskrit, the Atman or the Jiva, and the ego, which is the Ahankara. So the soul, sometimes I explain it like this. The vision of the soul is like having a mirror that's pointed upwards to the light. And that's its contact. That's its reality. The soul identifies with the spirit. Okay. The ego, the mirror of the ego, is pointed downward towards the body and the material world. So the ego makes us think that we are the body, that we're identified. Now, Yogananda's guru, Swami Sri Yukteswar, said some marvelous things, and they're in the autobiography of a yogi. And this is a very incisive one. Swami Sri Yukteswar said that all illness can be called, defined as spiritual amnesia. You think about that concept. Spiritual amnesia, and he goes on to say, we have forgotten who we are. We think that we're a body that has a soul, but it's the opposite that's true. We are a soul that has a body. Okay, so this is our challenge every day that we're living. With what do we identify? Do we identify with our expanded consciousness, our immortal self, our perfect image of the spirit? Or do we identify with our body? And the answer is 99% of the time, our identification is I'm tired, I'm hungry, I can't do this. Most of our thoughts, this is the subject actually of the second book, The Powers of the Mind. Our mind, Yogananda says, our mental diet is totally hypnotized by the ego. And it keeps us just thinking that we are the body and that for healing, we have to do it from the outside in. So we need to be aware of that. Of that, it's a power, that power that's pulling us to identify with the body in the material world. The other power is pulling us to identify with the spirit. And I think we're going to be getting very soon to the healing power of meditation.
Indeed. I wanted to take a moment to remind our listeners today on the Yoga Hour, my guest is Shivani Lucky. She is a senior Kriya Yoga teacher and co-founder of the Ananda Community in California and the one in Italy. She's the author of the book that we were discussing today, Healing with Life Force, Teachings and Techniques of Paramahansa Yogananda. We're discussing the volume today on prana. The author website where you can find more details on the book is called healinglifeforces.com, healinglifeforces.com. This link will be on our website along with this program. Our website is theyogahour.com. We welcome your comments and questions. You can contact us via that website, theyogahour.com, where you can sign up for our mailing list. So join in and be part of the community. As you mentioned, I'd like to take some time now to discuss some of the techniques that you go over in the book that Yogananda, relied on, that increase our awareness of prana. And as you mentioned, your part two of your book focuses on meditation. And we do talk a lot about meditation on the program, the importance of meditation for our spiritual awakening, our mental and emotional healing, and also, of course, the benefits for our physical health. On page 114 of the book, you quote Yogananda as saying, "If one removes ignorance from the soul by meditation and God contact, he has automatically removed mental and physical disease from his body." If one removes ignorance from the soul by meditation and God contact, she has automatically removed mental and physical disease from her body. By ignorance here, if one removes ignorance from the soul, he is talking about what we've been talking about, avidya, ignorance of our own innate divine nature. So I appreciate that you wrote daily meditation is the best way to stay healthy, build strong immunity to ward off illness, and get in touch with the inner strength to face health challenges and other crises. So would you say more about the importance of meditation for self-healing?
You know, during our daily life, our awareness through our senses has to be engaged in the physical world. And the physical world has limitations. When we're in our daily life, we talked about the twins, you know. So there's two, what should I say, two counselors that are in our mind, you know, or two angels, one in each soul shoulder. And the voice of the soul is very quiet, and in fact, it communicates through silence. Now, we know silence. There are often times when we're with people, especially people whom we love and know very well, where we don't need to speak because we know each other's thoughts and feelings and so forth, because that happens through contact, through intuition. So the soul is guiding us, you know, to our perfect health, to self-realization, but it's speaking to us in silence. So the ego is speaking to us through our activities and the engagement, you know, of our senses. You know, it's hot, it's cold,
It's a
I
little
need beer.
louder. It's a little
It
louder than that still small.
is
Isn't that what
obnoxious.
it's isn't that what it's called in the Bible, the still small voice within or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean that's the soul, but the ego is just screaming, and it's the only voice that we're accustomed to hearing. So, which I say, there's no game at all until we can get to a place where we can hear the voice of our soul in silence. So that's why when we meditate, finally the soul comes onto the battlefield. I mean, it's always there, but we become aware of that voice. And as we continue to meditate, as our meditation gets deeper, we begin to touch that immortal part of us, and we have that experience. One thing, an example that Yogananda used, very mundane, he said, if you're accustomed every day to eating a moldy cheese, you think that that's good. But once you eat something, you know, a cheese that's really fine and refined, you're never going to go back to the other one. And that's how it is with meditation, you know, that once we begin to get a taste of that bliss, then we have a point of reference. There's a point of comparison, you know, there's a gold standard. And then the soul can begin to guide us and help us to find solutions help us really to meet the challenges and understand how to meet them, how to overcome them. It's marvelous because in meditation, what we develop is our innate intuition, which is the soul's ability to know what is true.
Right. How do you know? You just know.
You know, because the soul is wise. That wisdom, we have the wisdom, we have the answers, we have the solutions. And if we go here inwardly first, we'll be guided to what we need also in the material world. We'll be guided to the right doctors, to the right procedures. We'll have the discrimination to know. There's a lot of stories in the book, where people have gone to doctors and received advice. And because of their meditation, they felt that it wasn't quite right. And so they meditated and asked to be led to other channels, and they were, and they got to the right place.
That's great. Now, you've already mentioned, which I really appreciated, that Yogananda identified two areas of as the cause of disease. So one would be an insufficiency of
Yes.
prana, and the other one is an imbalance of prana. Breath control techniques, which in Sanskrit are called pranayama, are taught in many yoga classes. Even hatha yoga classes often include a pranayama. They're taught in our tradition and in most spiritual traditions to quiet the thoughts and calm the mind and emotions. So let's turn there. Would you describe how prana, the life force, can be balanced with working with the physical breath? And you actually already mentioned that there is an association between prana, this vital force, and breath, that one of the translations of prana is breath. Would you say more about that?
Yes, I will. I'll be happy to. But before, I'd like to, if I may, with your permission, go back to the first point, which is how can we increase the supply of prana? And I'm just going to mention one or two things because these are Yogananda's special gifts to the science of spiritual healing. And the first one is the knowledge of where the door is. How does prana, where does prana get into the body? From the energy body, the astral body, where does it get into the physical body? So he teaches that there's a point in the physical body that's contact between the energy body and the material body. And science calls that point the medulla oblongata.
Right.
Okay?
It's part of the
And
brain, one of the structures in the at the base of the brain.
it's at the base of the brain, it's the lowest point, and it is the bridge between the brain. If you see it in a drawing, it's oblongata, meaning it's oblong, and it starts at the top of the spine and then goes up into the brain. Well, that point, Yogananda explains, is where the formation of the physical body began when the first two cells united, when the sperm and the ovum created one cell, that cell started and then divided, and that formed the medulla oblongata. And that the rest of the brain, then the spinal cord, and then the nervous system and so forth were created. So that's the doorway. And Yogananda has techniques for how to open that door. We won't get into that, but his teaching says this: the greater your will, the greater the flow of energy through that doorway. So when we're willing, when we want to do something, we have the energy to do it. And doctors even know that patients who want to live can even overcome terminal diagnoses, and those who give up, even if, an illness is not seen to be terminal, sometimes will die. So it is our will to live and to be healthy and to engage in our healing process that opens that door. Now, once the door is open, Yogananda has technique, which he called originally the Yogoda exercise, and which is known today as the energization exercises. That through the that technique, through that series, the prana gets distributed from the doorway to the different parts of the body, to the cells and the tissues, muscles, and organs. So that's the main, that's Yogananda's main pranayama techniques, meaning control. Now, to your question about the breath, the third definition of prana is breath. And pranayama, in that sense, means the ability to control the flow of our breath. So, talking about imbalance, you mentioned the energy body, the end, the structure of our prana body. Now, there's, and the book goes into it, Yogananda did in detail. You talked about the nadis, and there's two principal ones, three principal ones. They're called in Sanskrit the Ida, the Pingala, the Shushumna. Now, one, the Ida, is associated with inhalation. Energy rises in that channel. When it rises, it occasions inhalation. When energy descends in the body, it goes through the Pingala. When we have an illness, the flow between Ida and Pingala is not balanced. So, breathing exercises, all of them, have as their fundamental purpose to equalize the flow of energy in those two channels. And of course, there are many exercises, and they're used, not only in spiritual traditions, but I mean, for example, in the Lamaze birthing technique, in pain management, psychiatrists, and so forth, because the breath is so closely associated with physical balance, but also mental balance. So the breathing exercises, those pranayama exercises, can have a very significant impact, effect on our physical health by just getting us balanced. And even just a few minutes of doing some breathing exercises every day is a huge health benefit.
I thought it would be useful for our listeners if you actually reviewed one of the main pranayamas, and as as you mentioned, with this energy flow through the Ida and the Pingala, and the fact that the kind of purpose of the pranayama is to balance that energy. The one that I always think of first is alternate nostril breathing. So would you go ahead and just describe that for our listeners, knowing that eventually, hopefully, we'll release this as a video, but they'll just be listening to the podcast.
Certainly, yeah, definitely so. So the Sanskrit for this is Nadi Shodhanam. And I think it's really the go-to pranayama, as you said. It's your favorite, it's my favorite. It's what we teach and what we do before meditation. We start with a three-part even breathing, meaning inhaling through the nose, holding the breath, exhaling through the nose to an even count. Now, we start with that, Sitting up straight with a nice tall spine and using the abdomen, not using the upper chest for the breath, but using the diaphragm and the abdominal muscles. So that's the three-part breathing. The inhale, maybe to four counts, holding four counts, exhaling four counts at a comfortable pace. Now, the alternate nostril breathing, I would say that would be a warm-up, the three-part. Then we get to the Nadi Shodhanam, which is where the right nostril is closed. The inhalation comes through the left nostril. Then both nostrils are closed, holding to that even count. Then the right nostril is open for the exhalation. That's one half of Nadi Shodhanam, okay? With the three-part even breathing. So it could be inhale four, hold four, exhale four. Now, to balance, we begin the next round by inhaling through the right nostril to a count of, let's say, four, closing the nostrils, holding four, then opening the left nostril and exhaling for a count of four. Okay. Now that count can be slow, like this, or it can be faster, it can be longer, it can be a count of six, six, six. Even Yogananda recommends to build up over a long period of time to be able to do a pranayama with 20. 20, 20. And once you achieve that, don't stop to go even further. Because what we're doing is we are strengthening the major nadis in the nervous system. The stronger the nervous system, the better the healing process. So even when a person, if they're ill, if they're in bed, if they've had an operation, can always do breathing exercises and strengthen our energy structure.
Now, one of the things that I appreciated is that you also included in the book a little warning from Swami Kriyananda about not overdoing it, because I think that the tendency is potentially to make yourself go purple as you're trying to do these longer counts, and that's not that's not the idea. So would you share that quote with our listeners?
I will. And the reason is that especially in classes of Hatha Yoga, the emphasis is more on, from outside, in the physical aspect, let's say, of the postures and the pranayama. And it's easy for people to think, the more the more is better, more is better. And it's not. So here's Kriyananda's advice. One should not practice too many breathing exercises at one sitting. Now, I recommended a few minutes, and a few minutes is fine. Even a 5-minute session is fine. He continues, when one feels nervous or emotionally upset, he should do only the most gentle of these exercises. Finally, he should always be cognizant of the effects of these exercises upon his general nervous equilibrium. If they have an upsetting rather than a calming influence, they should be done for a shorter duration or even abandon altogether. So we need to really be in touch, with ourselves. More is not better. And what is the purpose? The purpose is to calm. The purpose is to even out, to balance, The purpose is not to overheat the nervous system. There are pranayams that heat up the system for specific purposes, especially for digestion, like the breath of fire. That should be done, with a lot of prudence. But what we want to get to is the point where the energy flow is so balanced in Ida and Pingala that we don't need to breathe anymore, that we're connected directly to pure prana. And that is the objective of meditation practice. Yogananda said, breathlessness is deathlessness. And yogis have been found who have been sitting in meditation without breathing for days, months. Some of them have been buried and brought up, and they've been there for decades.
So I did want to touch, we're almost out of time, but I did
Sure.
want to touch on willpower because you talked about the association with willpower, the strength of our will, increasing the prana flow. And I just thought that part was fascinating. And you give some recipes for increasing our willpower, including a few that surprised me. And so I thought I'd mention some of them. So one, the first one was do something different every day. Fabulous. And another one, engage in a creative activity every day or at least once a week. So it's just interesting to me that when we're thinking about building our willpower, most people would, I think these are not the first things that would come to mind necessarily when someone was talking about increasing their willpower. Something like, doing something different every day, engaging in a creative activity. So would you, in just a minute or two, say a little bit more about that and how those practices work to help us increase our willpower.
The enemy of health is passivity, is laziness, of not engaging. And when we fall ill, our willpower diminishes and we don't want to do anything. So when we establish for ourselves a habit, I mean, actually a way of living where we every day engage our will by doing something. Okay. Will, Yogananda said, means willingness to participate, willingness to engage. You see, the people who are depressed, who are chronically ill, they don't want to do anything. So our willpower, we use it for everything, often just unconsciously. But when we use it, especially to expand, to challenge ourselves, to get out of ruts, to get out of ha old habit patterns that are bringing our energy down. And when we do that regularly, and that's why Yogananda recommends, he says, do something creative. He doesn't say write a poem every day or,
Right.
but just do something creative. I mean, I go and pick flowers from my garden when there are flowers in my garden every morning. And I come back, and I spend, sometimes even 20 minutes or a half an hour making just little flower arrangements and putting them around the house and then giving them to my neighbors. That is a creative act,
Right. Yeah.
and little challenges. They can be little things. If you normally go for a walk for a half an hour, go for a walk for a half an hour a little faster.
Right.
It just engage the will
Yeah.
so that we're not just always at a low or mediocre level. And when we do, our tank, our prana tank stays full. It
Oh.
doesn't go down.
Yes. Fabulous advice. I love it. Now, unbelievably, we have come to the end of our time together, although there's so much more in your book that I would love to talk about. In closing, what words of encouragement or inspiration would you like to share with our listeners?
I think I'd say that we need to be convinced that we do have the power to be well and to heal ourselves. And that if we can remember to do what we need to do to keep our tank full of energy, of prana, every day, just really keep it full, hour by hour, okay, we will be healthy. So that would be my final word. Keep your tank full of prana.
Fantastic. For our listeners, you've been listening to the Yoga Hour. It's been my pleasure to share this time with you. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, producer and host of the Yoga Hour. My guest today has been Shivani Lucky, a founding member of the Ananda community in California and the co-founder of the Ananda community in Italy. She's the author of the book we've been discussing today, Healing with Life Force: Teachings and Techniques of Paramahansa Yogananda. And we've been discussing the first volume in the series, the one on prana. The way to access the books is through the link to Crystal Clarity. You can find that. We'll put that on our website, but you can also find it on her author website, healinglifeforces.com. Thank you so much, Shivani Lucky, for joining me today on the Yoga Hour.
Thank you very much. It's been a delight.
For listeners, we hope you'll join us for the many online programs offered by the sponsor of this program, the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. CSE offers daily online meditation in the mornings at 6:30 a.m. Pacific, in the afternoons at 4, and Monday evenings at 7:30. Again, all those times are Pacific time. There's also a Sunday satsang. Satsang is a Sanskrit word meaning a gathering of truth seekers. That happens at 10 a.m. Pacific each week. Another podcast that might be of interest to listeners of this program is the Kriya Yoga Today podcast with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien that includes presentations from classes and talks that she has given. You can access this through the CSE website, csecenter.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. Again, details about these programs that I've mentioned and many other classes and events are at the website, csecenter.org. Join us next time on the Yoga Hour when my guest will be Kate O'Donnell. We will be discussing how women can optimize our health and wellness through the science of Ayurveda. The Yoga Hour is a service project of the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, a meditation center in the Kriya Yoga tradition. Remember, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're enjoying the program, share it with a friend. Thank you to the Yoga Hour team, founder and spiritual director Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, assistant producers Anne Hayes, Mickey Coronado, and Lauren Leidinger. I look forward to being with you again. Until then, remember, you carry your own healing and wholeness within you. Share your peace and joy with all you meet. Bye now.